Good morning. As you all know, this coming year, Shnat Tafshin Pei Bet, Habaleinu Litova, is a Shemitah year. It's a sabbatical year. And so, Bishutchem, with your permission, I'd like to embark together with you on a journey, if you will, a series of shiurim on the topic of Shemitah. This morning's class will be an introduction, and we'll discuss the Ta'amei HaMitzvah, the reasons or rationale behind the commandment of Shemitah, the sabbatical year. Now, of course, when we discuss the Ta'amei HaMitzvah, it's important to point out that we mere mortals have no idea why HaKadosh Baruch Hu commanded this mitzvah or these mitzvot. You know, it would be brazen for us to suggest that there's a specific reason, unless the Torah itself tells us. But when we study the Ta'amei HaMitzvot, the reasons or rationales behind the mitzvot that the Chachmei HaTalmud give us or the Rishonim give us, so it's important to just understand that we're trying to understand what maybe HaKadosh Baruch Hu in his divine wisdom wants us to learn from the mitzvah, what he wants us to take away from the mitzvah. It would be arrogant. It would be irresponsible to suggest that this is the reason why HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us this commandment, unless he himself tells us the reason in his Torah. But when, again, we study Ta'amei HaMitzvah, we're trying to tease out maybe some of the lessons that Hashem wants us to learn with these mitzvot. And the Torah itself, in Parashat Mishpatim, it would seem, gives at least one of the reasons behind the mitzvah of Shemitah, of letting the land lie fallow for a full year, every 7 years. The Torah in Parashat Mishpatim, Shmot Perek Chaf Gimel, Exodus chapter 23, says the following: for 6 years you will sow your field and gather up its produce. But on the seventh year, you shall leave it unattended, unharvested. Let it lie fallow, if you will. And this is important for our discussion this morning. The achlu Evyonei amecha, v'yitram, tochal chayat ha-sadeh, kein ta'aseh l'charmecha l'zeitecha. And the Torah says, and the poor of your people, the destitute, v'achlu evyonei amecha, shall eat. And the wildlife of your field shall eat what is left, v'yitram, tochal chayat ha-sadeh, kein ta'aseh l'charmecha l'zeitecha. So too you shall do with your vineyard and your olive grove, not just your field where you farm your grain, but also your orchards where you have your olive trees and your vineyards where you have your grapes, the Torah says. So the Torah, it would seem, gives a reason behind this mitzvah. The achlu of yonei amecha, the poor of your nation shall eat. For 1 year, all of the produce is hefker. It doesn't belong to you. It's ownerless. You can't sell it. You can't profit from it. And since it's ownerless, that allows the poor to come and eat. Now, as we'll see in a moment, we have a number of mitzvot hatzliot ba'aretz, agricultural laws, laws that are connected with the land of Israel that would seem to be about feeding the poor and taking care of the poor. And then in Parshat Behar, the beginning of Parshat Behar, in Vayikra Chaf Hei, Leviticus 25, the Torah says, Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe Behar Sinai Leimor, Daber el Bnei Yisrael, Amarta Lehem, Ki Tavo el Haaretz Asher Ni Noten Lachem, Vishafta Haaretz Shabbat Lashem. When you enter into the land that I will give you, the land shall observe a Shabbos for God, a Shabbat LaHashem. So here, interesting, we have now the Torah comparing Shemitah to Shabbat, or at the very least calling Shemitah Shabbat. The Torah, in a number of places, refers to Shemitah as Shabbat. Just as we rest on the seventh day, Shabbos, we let the land rest in the seventh year, Shemitah or Shvi'it. Sheish shanim tizra sadecha v'sheish shanim tizmor karmecha v'asafta et tvuata. For 6 years you could sow your field, and for 6 years prune your vineyard and gather in its crop, like we saw in Parshat Mishpatim. Uvashana shvi'it Shabbat Shabbaton yela aretz. But in the seventh year, it's a Shabbat Shabbaton, a Sabbath of Sabbaths, a complete rest for the land. Now again, here the Torah is calling Shemitah, what? Shabbat. But instead of saying it's a Shabbat Lashem, here the Torah introduces another Nikudah. It's a Shabbat for what? It's a Sabbath for the what? Shabbat Shabbaton yeh la'aretz, for the land. We'll come back to that in a moment. Okay. And then Shabbat Lashem. And then the Torah says that it's a Sabbath for God. Lo tizra, sadcha lo tizra, v'charmecha lo tizmor. So the pasuk says it's both a Sabbath for the land and a Sabbath for Hashem again, right? Repeating that it's a Shabbat Lashem and telling us that you're not supposed to harvest your grapes, you're not supposed to prune your vineyards, etc. Not supposed to seed your fields. It's fiach kitzircha lo tiktzor v'et invei nizirecha lo tiktzor shnat shabbaton yeh la'aretz. Again, telling us some of the details of the mitzvah, the aftergrowth you can't reap and the grapes you can't set aside and pick. And it's a shnat shabbaton. It's a year of rest for the what? For the land. So interesting, the Torah refers to it as a Shabbos for God and a Shabbos for the land. It's a shnat shabbaton yeh la'aretz. V'hayta shabbat ha'aretz, again, a Sabbath for the land, pasuk vav. And it will be a Sabbath for the land. V'hayta shabbat ha'aretz lachem. Now the Torah introduces something new. What does the Torah say here? It's a Sabbath for the aretz, right? A Sabbath for the land, but it shall be for what? For you. For you. Now, it means for you to eat. In other words, you're prohibited from working the land. You're prohibited from benefiting from commerce, from selling its produce, but you're allowed to eat from the land. But what's interesting is here, the Torah introduces that it's a Shabbos for you as well. Okay, it's for you. V'ayta Shabbat ha'aretz lachem l'ochla, l'cha u'levadcha u'lamatecha, l'schircha u'letoshavcha, hagarim imach, not only for you, but for your servants and your maidservants and your laborers and the residents who dwell with you, u'livem techa l'chaya asher ba'artzecha, tia kol tvuata le'echol. And for your animal, the animal that is in your land, they can also eat from it as well. Okay, and these are also important details, important halachot, which maybe we'll get into in subsequent shiurim. But what's interesting here, and what I'd like you to pay attention to this morning, is how these psukim refer to Shemitah, the seventh year, as a Shabbat Lashem. It's a Sabbath for God. It's a Shabbat La'aretz. It's a Sabbath for the land, but it's also a Sabbath for you. It's a Shabbat Ha'aretz Lachem. And you could ask the question, well, which one is it, right? Is it a Sabbath for the land? Is it a Sabbath for God? Is it a Sabbath for you? Well, the answer is all three. It's like the joke, and again, I apologize at the outset. I'm probably going to destroy it in the delivery. But, you know, the old joke that two people come to the rabbi with some sort of argument. The rabbi hears out the first individual, Reuven. Reuven says his piece, and the rabbi strokes his beard and says, you know what, you're right. And then he listens to Shimon, and Shimon gives over his side of the story. The rabbi, again, strokes his beard and says, you know what, you're right. And so the rabbi's wife, who's in the kitchen listening, and comes over and says, I don't understand, how could he be right and he be right? And so the rabbi says, you know what? You're right too.
The rabbi was right in telling his wife that. She was right, I suppose, right? A happy wife is a happy life. But the idea is that, you know, these multiple truths can coexist within our tradition. And we'll see, though, how these three expressions, it's a Shabbat Lashem, a Sabbath for God, a Shabbat La'aretz, a Sabbath for Len, a Shabbat Lachem, we'll see how these three different expressions inform this discussion of the Tamei HaMitzvah, and inform the different shitot, the different opinions among the Rishonim and Achronim, who try and tease out what are the reasons or some of the lessons that we can learn from this mitzvah. Right? Some will focus on the fact that it's a Shabbos for God, and some will focus on the fact that maybe it's a Shabbos for the land, and some will focus more on the fact that it's a Shabbos for you. Some will try to reconcile all three. Okay? And we'll see Ezrat Hashem together this morning about six different categories, if you will, that we can place this mitzvah into. What's fascinating about this particular mitzvah, you know, there are so many mitzvot in our Torah, and there are so many rich explanations and explorations and explications. In other words, that start with the prefix X. But there are so many different hezberim and tamei hamitzvah that are given for different mitzvot, but I'm not aware, I'm sure there are, you know, ani katonti, I'm not aware of another specific mitzvah that has just so many different opinions. There are at least a dozen different reasons given in the Rishonim and the Achronim for the mitzvah of Shemitah. It's fascinating. But I've broken them down to about six different categories, okay? So if you'll look in all the different parshanim on the Torah, and if you look in all the different rishonim that discuss the Tamei HaMitzvah and the Achronim, you'll find, you know, maybe 12 different possible, or almost a dozen different possible explanations, but I think you can break them down into six different categories, which we'll see together this morning. First, I'll call your attention. Oh, but before we do that, though, actually, take a look at source number three. This is from the Tochacha, the rebuke of the Torah in Parashat Bechukotai, where the Torah tells us if we stray from the commandments of the Torah, oy vavoy, the punishments that await us. And interesting, the Torah there mentions Shemitah. There is a reference to Shemitah. The Torah invokes Shemitah. And the Torah says, as tirtzeh, Ha'aretz et shabtoteha kol yemei hashama v'atem be'eretz oyveichem az tishbat ha'aretz v'hirtzat et shabtoteha. The Torah says if you stray from the divine command and you'll be punished, you'll be placed in exile, and then what, the land will then be appeased. This lashon of tirtzeh, the land will be appeased for its sabbaticals. It's Shabtotea, it's Shabbases, it's Shmitot. During all the years of its desolation, while you are in the land of your enemies, then the land will rest and it will appease for its sabbaticals. We'll explain what that means in a moment. Pasuk Lamed Hey, Kol Yemei Hashama Tishpot et Asher Lo Shafta B'Shabtotechem B'Shiftechem Aleha. All the years of its desolation, the land will rest, whatever, however, corresponding to whatever it did not rest during the sabbaticals when you were dwelling on the land. What is the Torah saying here? What is the Torah promising in its tochacha, in its rebuke? Right, that if you do not, exactly, that if you do not keep Shemitah, when you are living on the land of Israel, that ultimately you're going to go into exile, you're going to go into Galut, and the land will rest without you. Corresponding to the amount of years that you did not allow it to rest. And Rashi there explains that the 70 years of Galut Bavel, of the Babylonian exile, corresponded to 70 years that the Jewish people did not keep Shemitah while living on their land. Okay? So while this is not exactly telling us the reasons behind the mitzvah of Shemitah. The Torah here is certainly emphasizing how significant this mitzvah is and how egregious of a sin it is should the Jewish people not keep this mitzvah. So it would seem to be a very, very significant mitzvah here. It would seem to be one of the reasons why we're going to be exiled into the exile, into the diaspora, into the galut, so that the land can rest corresponding to the amount of years which you did not allow it to rest. So shuv, again, that serves to emphasize the tremendous significance of this mitzvah. Okay? Now, coming back to our question of what are some of the reasons behind Shemitah or the lessons we can learn from the mitzvah of Shemitah. When you're interested in the Ta'amei HaMitzvah, where do you go? What are some of the classic works that you take a look at? Okay, so Sefer HaMitzvot of the Rambam, there the Rambam is numbering the Taryag Mitzvot. He's dealing more, I would say, on a halachic level. You know, he's speaking more to the halachic side of the mitzvot, but sometimes he includes some of the reasons. But what is another work of the Rambam that we're all familiar with? Mori Levuchim, the Rambam's work of philosophy. So there the Rambam deals with the Ta'amei HaMitzvah. And as you said, Sefer HaChinuch as well, which we'll come to shortly. But first, take a look at source number 4. This is from the third section of the Mori Nevuchim, where the Rambam deals with Shemitah explicitly. And he writes, V'amnam kol ha-mitzvot asher safarnum b'hilchot Shemitah v'yovel mehem l'chemla al b'nei Adam v'archava l'bnei Adam kulam. He says, there where we've enumerated the laws of Shemitah and Yovel, we've seen how all of these mitzvot, and he's referring not only to the mitzvah of Shemitah and Yovel, but the agricultural laws as well, that they are ultimately about mercy and graciousness and kindness and concern for humanity. V'archava livnei Adam kulam, kemosha amar, and he invokes the pasuk that we began with, shenemar v'achlu evyonei amecha, that the whole point of Shemitah, the Torah itself tells us, is to feed the poor. So that's the first explanation the Rambam gives in his Mori Nevuchim for this mitzvah. It's about feeding the poor. Let's call it a social welfare program or a social welfare system. And as I mentioned, we have many agricultural laws that would seem to be about this very idea. Right? This year, we are in a Ma'aser Ani year. Correct? When you separate your Trumot and Ma'asrot, some years you have Ma'aser Sheni, years 1, 2, 4, and 5, you bring your Ma'aser Sheni up to Jerusalem and eat it there, or you redeem it on some money and spend that money in Jerusalem. But on years, or during years 3 and 6, the Torah says those are years where you give your Ma'aser Ani, that extra tithe to the poor. Okay, this year we're in a Ma'aser Ani year. And if you separate your Trumot and Ma'asrot, if you take your grandchildren fruit picking, or if you have some fruit trees in your garden, you have to be aware. You have to know how to give this to a poor person. Now, if you take your grandkids cherry picking and you separate like one little cherry, so that poor person doesn't want your one cherry, right? What's he going to do with it? And how are you going to even find a poor person? Baruch Hashem, you know, and who really fits into that category? It's hard to find. And it's such a tircha to have to go after them. So there, you know, there are patentim, there are ways to deal with this or to address this. The Mishnah talks about extending a loan to the poor person in advance of the year, or at the beginning of the year, and then every time that you take off a little cherry, right, instead of giving the poor person that cherry, so a little bit comes off in terms of how much he has to pay you back, right? A little bit is deducted from that loan that you had given him at the beginning of the year. And there are organizations like Machon, HaTorah V'Aretz, that I think it's 80 shekel a year, you know, so for many of us, that's a lot more than the value of the, you know, cherry every 6 months or something we're going to separate. If you're a farmer, it's a different story. But if you're taking your grandkids fruit picking a couple times a year, certainly that 80 shekel suffices. And that at the end of the year, you forgive the loan. You know, it goes to a good cause. It goes to tzedakah. And they worry about finding the right type of ani for these purposes, etc. So that's just one example. But the Trumot and Ma'asrot, as many explain, are to provide for the Kohen and the Levi, who don't share a formal inheritance in the land of Israel. They don't have a formal share of land in the land of Israel. They are our spiritual leaders, our teachers of Torah. They're not necessarily involved in working the land. So we take care of their needs, and we are concerned for the poor. We have leket, shichcha, peyah, Peret, Olulot, all these different mitzvot, where we allow poor people to come and to glean and to take from the corners of the field and the sheaves that you drop, etc., etc., etc. So the first reason the Rambam gives for the mitzvah of Shemitah is the reason the Torah itself gives, to take care of the poor, a social welfare program, a socioeconomic program, if you will. Okay, so that's an interesting question. If that's so, why only once in 7 years, right? Right, so as I said, we have, what are the anim doing for the other 6 years? So I as I said, we have other mitzvot, leket, shichcha, peyah, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We also have a mitzvot tzedakah, potech, tiftach et yadcha, lo tikpotz et yadcha. There's a positive commandment to give, there's a negative commandment. We have other mitzvot of tzedakah as well. But some explain, I've seen this with regards to Ma'aser Ani. Ma'aser Ani is only the third year and the sixth year, right? Why is Ma'aser Ani not every 7 years in the seven-year cycle of Shemitah? And so I've seen an interesting answer. Well, maybe the reason is because we want to encourage the poor person to get out of his state of poverty. If it would be every year, maybe he would get used to it. He would get comfortable, right? By alternating years and not providing for him every year. So we encourage him to try to, I don't know, enter the workforce, try to better his life situation. And maybe you could give that answer by Shemitah as well. That answer then, though, provides a little bit of a difficulty with many of the other mitzvot. Well, we have mitzvot tzedakah, right? And we have other mitzvot of leket shichcha peyah, et cetera, that apply during all 7 years of the Shemitah cycle. So in any case, but our Torah certainly is very much concerned for the poor and allowing people to get out of debt. And we have, the Rambam continues, by the way, in this passage and talks about Shemitat Ksafim. At the end of the Shemitah year, we nullify all debts, we cancel out all loans, we allow the poor person to get out of debt, so to speak. Okay, now, yes, we can write up a prose bowl in order to allow him to pay you back, and that's because if every 7 years all the loans are canceled, all the debts are wiped away so that no one will want to lend money ever. Okay, but, you know, that aside, the Torah allows for a person to try to better his life. But it's a good question. It's a good question. That's the first answer of the Rambam. The second answer, the Rambam continues, and this is a fascinating answer. He writes, V'shetosif ha'aretz tvuata v'titchazek be'emda shmuta. What does that mean? What is the Rambam saying here? Any suggestions? It's a benefit to the land. He says the land will increase its produce and the land will become stronger when it lays fallow. I'm sorry, what did you want to say in the back? Crop rotation. So interesting. You know, I'm not a farmer. I'm not a, you know, a botanist or a, you know, expert in agriculture. But there is some truth to the fact that, you know, over time, the land becomes depleted of its nutrients. And, you know, today, okay, we have all sorts of fertilizers and all sorts of technologies. But certainly back then, it was important to let the land rest in order to allow the land that has been depleted of its nutrients to somehow get strong again. And as you mentioned in the back, in the medieval period, they began something which is very healthy for the land called crop rotations, where they grow different things different years. Of course, this begins, anyone know what this begins with regards to Hilchot Pesach? According to many, this begins the Isur of Kitniot. Kitnios. This leads to the prohibition of kitnios, because once farmers in, you know, medieval Ashkenaz are rotating their crops, and one year they're planting wheat, and one year they're planting legumes and beans and things, so you're going to have all sorts of stray wheat. There's a certain name for it. I forgot the name for it, but wheat that just grows from the seeds that were left that you didn't plant, but they're going to grow together with the legumes the following year. So you're rotating your crops around. You're planting on this plot here, beans, rice, corn, whatever it is, where you planted wheat or some other grain of the five grains last year. And so it can get mixed up. Okay. In any case, the second tam that the Rambam gives in his Mora Nevuchim is, let's call it an agricultural or an ecological concern. He's concerned for the land, right? You can imagine this is very popular. And it's interesting to see how in recent years, the whole concept of Shemitah has been, you know, adopted, if you will, appropriated maybe by certain organizations that talk about, the importance of being green and minimizing your carbon footprint and a concern for the environment. They like this idea of letting the land rest for a year, right? It's very woke, if you will, this idea, very woke. You could try to understand the Rambam. Where does the Rambam come up with this chidush, that it's somehow good for the land? Okay, well, the Rambam was a philosopher. The Rambam was a rationalist. The Rambam was a doctor. He was a physician, a medical doctor. He was a scientist. So it could be that that's what influenced the Rambam's opinion here in saying that it's a benefit to the land. It could also be from the Torah itself, right? Because the Torah says that it's a Shabbat for the land. Somehow it's to benefit the land as well. It's a Shabbos for God. It's a Shabbos for you, but it's a Shabbos for the land. And for the Rambam, it has to benefit the land. But what are some of the challenges there? Any possible challenges, any possible questions you can ask on the Rambam if you say that the whole reason behind this mitzvah, or one of the reasons, is to benefit the land somehow? What are some possible questions that you can ask based on that assumption? What are some kashas? Any suggestions? Okay, so one question you could ask, well, if it's to benefit the land, if it's healthy for the land, if it's to strengthen the land, so why does this mitzvah only apply in Eretz Yisrael? If it's for the land, should that not apply outside of Eretz Yisrael as well? Well, you could answer, okay, but you know, the Torah is given for us to perform its mitzvot in the land of Israel. The land of Israel is the most ideal place to perform the mitzvot HaTorah. The Torah lives and breathes in its natural habitat on this soil, in this land. Yes, you can take a panda out of Asia and raise it in the Bronx, New York, in the Bronx Zoo, but that's not its natural habitat. You can create certain conditions in which it can thrive, but that's not where it's supposed to live. So the Torah, yes, is to be performed in Chutz La'aretz. Many of the mitzvot of the Torah apply in Chutz La'aretz, but the ideal place for the performance of the Torah is on this soil. So you could say, well, maybe God chose this land. Okay, but again, if it's all about the land, you could argue maybe it should apply in Chutz La'aretz as well. The Kli Yakar asks a question. Yes, it's called a Shabbat for the land, but it's also called a Shabbat LaHashem. So the Kli Yakar tries to reconcile the two. He says, if it's about the land, if it's to benefit the land, so then how is it a benefit to God? Not really a benefit to God. Right? It's a benefit to the land.
What about the idea of the
Kohanim? Oh, Yafet. Okay, great question. So the Baal HaAkeda, Rabbi Yitzchak Arama, who lives in 15th century Spain, he actually was expelled from Spain with his family, moves to Portugal, ultimately to Italy, and dies in Italy in 1494. But he's a very important thinker and commentary. So in his work, Akedat Yitzchak, he's known as the Baal HaAkedah for his work, Akedat Yitzchak. He asks that very question. If it's all about the land, if it's ultimately to benefit the land, so why does the Torah in its tochacha, in its rebuke, say that if you don't keep these mitzvot, you're going to be exiled and you're going to have to go into galut and the land is going to rest without you? What's so egregious about that? If it's ultimately to benefit the land, why is it such a, it would seem from the Torah, it's such a significant mitzvah. It's so egregious not to observe this mitzvah. So asks Rav Yitzchak Arama, like, if it's just about benefiting the land, it doesn't seem, the punishment doesn't seem to fit the deed, the act, the crime. The punishment doesn't fit the crime, he asks. Yes. So that's interesting. So that's a question we'll see in a moment. That's the question of the Abravanel here in source number 5. This second Tam of the Rambam in his Mor Nevuchim is based on what assumption? That over time, what happens? The land gets weaker and weaker, if you will, right? The nutrients, the minerals become depleted over time. And then you have to let the land rest to try and rejuvenate. Okay, so that implies that over time, it's getting weaker and weaker. So what happens? You start off after the Shemitah year, year one, and the land is gezinta, it's a strong land, right? And then it's year two and three, four, but then it would seem if ultimately it's all about letting the land rejuvenate, the land, that means, that implies the land gets weaker over time. But what does the Torah itself promise us? Exactly. That in year six, there's going to be a surplus. And you're going to, in year six, grow enough produce to provide you, if you keep this mitzvah properly, for years six, right? Because you need for that year, the present year, right, this year, it's going to, the land is going to be so bountiful, so much shefa bracha, right? It's going to provide you for the sixth year, the current year. It's going to provide you enough food for the seventh year when you cannot work your land, okay? And not only that, but it's going to provide you enough for the eighth year because you can only begin to start working your land and planting in the eighth year. So if you're only beginning to plant in Tishrei of the eighth year, so what? It takes a lot of time. You may not be able to really, you know, reap the benefits. The season already might be over. Again, I'm not a farmer. You'll have to excuse my ignorance. But so the Torah promises that in the sixth year, you will have a three-year surplus. You'll be able to, you'll have enough for the sixth, the seventh, and the eighth year. Now, if the land, as the Rambam says, needs to rest, to rejuvenate, to strengthen the land, if it's a Shabbat for the Aretz, so that would imply that the land, especially in the sixth year, is very weak. Why? Because it needs a year, it needs the seventh year to rest, to strengthen it. So that would imply that the sixth year is the weakest year. But the sixth year, the Torah says, is going to provide you enough bounty for 3 years. The sixth year is the most bountiful year. And by the way, I've heard that there are farmers, religious farmers, that are claiming that this year they've had just a tremendous, tremendous output. Yes, I'm sorry? Around Nichalim?
Yeah. In charge of coordinating all of the farmers and their crops. And he's talking about this crop came in at 350% more.
Incredible.
Than usual. And this crop came in at 500%.
Incredible. Incredible. Yeah, so I've seen this and heard from people that the farmers are saying this year, wow. I mean, halavai. Yeah, I think that's incredible. I've heard firsthand from a winemaker that I know that he's very careful to keep all the laws of Shemitah. I mean, it's a little bit easier if you have a vineyard because, okay, there are many things you cannot do, but you can still make wine. That wine that's made from the grapes that grow during the Shemitah year has Kiddushat Shvi'it. So you have to treat that wine carefully. You have to be very careful with that wine. Okay. But he won awards in Europe and all sorts of accolades here in the land of Israel for his wine. And he believes that it's because he kept all of the laws of Shemitah, Kihilchatan, very carefully. And that's what he really believes, that he kept the laws of Shemitah. And because of this, Hashem blessed his wine with all these accolades and all these awards, etc. So take a look at source number 5. This is a commentary to Masechet Avot, to Pirkei Avot, by the Abravanel. And it's called Nachalat Avot. For the sake of time, we'll just summarize a very lengthy piece. But the Abravanel is commenting on the Mishnah in the 5th chapter of Masechet Avot. There the Mishnah says that one of the things that brings exile into the world is Shemitah. It says that Galut Bala Olam, exile comes into the world because of Avodah Zarah, Gilui Arayot, Shfichut Damim, the three cardinal sins, idolatry, adultery, murder, and that's something that we are familiar with. The first temple was destroyed because of those three things, the Talmud says. Okay, so that makes a lot of sense why the Mishnah tells us that exile comes into the world because of those three things. And then the Mishnah says, V'al hashmatat ha'aretz. Shemitah also brings exile into the world, or more accurately, the lack of Shemitah observance, if you're not careful with Shemitah. And that is consistent with what we saw in Parshat Bechukotai, Vayikra Perek Chavav, Leviticus 26, source number 3. But the Torah says, if you do not observe Shemitah, you will go into exile and the land will rest without you. Right? You don't want to rest on the land will rest without you. And the Mishnah there in that same Perek talks about how famine comes into the land because of different things, and Dever, plague comes into the land because of Perot HaShvit. That's one of the things that brings plague, not treating the fruits of the seventh year carefully, perhaps doing business with them, okay? And the Mishnah there says at different points during the year, different points rather in a cycle of years, at different time periods, plague increases, Dever is mitrabed, increases. And one of the time periods that the Mishnah lists there is the year following Shvi'it, or immediately after Shvi'it, Motzei Shvi'it. Why Motzei Shvi'it? Does plague increase? Because Shemitah was not kept properly. And specifically, the context of that Mishnah, it's talking about feeding the poor, because it also says that plague increases following the third year and following the sixth year, which we mentioned are years of Maaser Ani, where you're supposed to tithe to the poor. So if you don't tithe to the poor properly in the third year and in the sixth year, so following those years, there's going to be plague. There's going to be plague that's increased, the Mishnah says. Okay? But in any case, there in that context, the Abravanel, here in source number 5, takes the Rambam to task for this ecological or agricultural reason that somehow Shemitah is about letting the land rest. And he asks a number of questions that we've already mentioned. And one is, he says, if the whole idea is that the land needs to rest and needs to strengthen itself, well, what about the Torah's promise of how in the sixth year, the land is going to be so strong and so fruitful, it's going to provide for 3 years? He also mentions the Baal Akedah, Akedat Yitzchak, Rabbi Yitzchak Arama. They were contemporaries, by the way. They lived around the same time period. The Abravanel was a little younger. The Abravanel was born in 1737. The Baal Akeda, the Akedat Yitzchak, was born in 1720. But he quotes him a number of times. The Abravanel quotes the Abravanel. And here he quotes the question of the Abravanel, who asks, well, if it's all about strengthening the land, if it's to benefit the land, why is the punishment so harsh? Which was your question. He says that that was the question of one of the Chachmei Hador, one of the Chachami Chachmei Hador, one of the wise of this generation. And he doesn't mention his name explicitly, but it's a reference to the Baal Akeda, Akedat Yitzchak, who he was very familiar with. And then he offers or quotes the Baal Akeda's reason that it's ultimately a lesson in Amunah, which we will see shortly in the words of the Sefer HaChinuch. But the Abravanel disagrees with that as well. And you can ask, if it's a lesson in Amunah, if it's ultimately about trust in God and belief in God and faith in God, well, you could ask, well, shouldn't that apply in Chutz La'aretz as well? If it's all about seeing that Hashem is in charge, we're not, who are we? We're not the balabus here, right? The field's not mine, the field belongs to God. And just as we'll see, Shabbos is a day of rest where I recognize that I'm not a master over creation, right? 6 days out of the week, I'm the balabus. I'm the creator. I'm building and I'm creating and I'm doing malacha, which is creative activity. We'll explain in a moment. One day a week, I cease from all creative activity and recognize who is the real creator? HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I recognize that Hashem created the world in 6 days and rested on the seventh. And in a similar vein, Shemitah is a Shabbos, because Shemitah reminds us, okay, for 6 years I work my field, I reap its produce, I'm the balabus. Oh, then comes along a full year, I put down my tools, my farming equipment, my farming instruments, and I recognize HaKadosh Baruch Hu is in charge, and all the produce that I've reaped over the course of the past 6 years was all from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But ultimately, if it's a test of faith or a lesson in faith, right? So that should apply in Chutz La'aretz as well. So what the Abravanel suggests, if you take a look at the bottom of the page where I've underlined, again, it's this long passage. We don't have time, unfortunately, to read the entirety together. You'll look at it for homework. But at the bottom of the page where I've underlined, the Abravanel writes the following. Avalamitata inyan, the truth of this matter. Avalamitata inyan azeh, the truth of this matter is who? She'eretz Yisrael yesh la ba'atzma skula nifla'ah. The land of Israel has this wondrous character, v'yachas gadol ligbol anitzot Eloki, and it somehow is able to receive the divine spark, v'hashkacha ha'elyona titiached bo'ta ha'aretz bo'ofan nifla ma she'en ken b'shum eretz acheret. And it has, again, this tremendous divine providence that makes it unique from all the other lands in the world. There are no other lands that have the same amount of Hashgachat Hashem. In fact, he invokes the Pasuk that this is a land that the eyes of God are upon, Mirishit Hashana L'Acharit Shana, from the beginning of the year to the end of the year, which, of course, expresses this idea that the land of Israel benefits from a tremendous divine providence. This is a land where the Shekhinah rests. Okay? And so that's why this mitzvah is unique to the land. And so according to the Abravanel, why do we allow the land to rest? Or why are we commanded to let the land rest? It's ultimately about recognizing the Kiddushat Haaretz. The land has this tremendous spiritual quality, this sanctity, this holiness. It has this skula nifla, this incredible character. It is a place for the divine spark, holiness, and tremendous hashgachat Hashem. Okay? And the Abravanel is not the only one who says this. There are others, we'll see shortly. Rav Kook emphasizes this concept of kiddushat haaretz, the sanctity of the land, as many other Jewish thinkers do. But here, he on the other side of the page, he
He reiterates this idea and quotes the pasuk from Devarim Yud Aleph, Deuteronomy 11, that the eyes of God are Doresho Tatamid. This is a land that God is constantly seeking out, searching out, and the eyes of God are on this land. Merishita Shana Vadacharit Shana. From the beginning of the year until the end of the year, it's ultimately about the unique quality of the land, the sanctity of the land, the Kiddushat Haaretz. It's a Shabbat Lashem, for God, it's His land. It's a Shabbat Haaretz. It's a rest or a Sabbath for the land, right? And it's also Shabbat for us, recognizing the spiritual quality. And that's why this mitzvah does not apply in Chutz La'aretz. Because again, if it's all about seeing that God is behind your sustenance, God sustains you and provides for you. So the farmer in Iowa, or the farmer in Omaha, I lived with my family for a year in Omaha, Nebraska. Now, Omaha is, it's a nice city, very metropolitan, outside of Omaha, a lot of cornfields, of course. I was the associate rabbi of the Orthodox synagogue in Omaha. Yes, there are Orthodox Jews in Omaha, Nebraska. I knew both of them. No. I think at the time, according to the Jewish Federation there were about 6,000 Jews as part of the Jewish community there. I don't know if all of them we would consider Jews al pi halacha, but according to Jewish law. But in any case, it was a wonderful, small but vibrant Jewish community, and I lived there for a year with my family. So if it's ultimately a test of faith, wow, the farmer has to put down his tools. Shut down his combine. Thank you. If the farmer has to turn off his combine for a whole year, it's a tremendous test of faith. But it's ultimately about recognizing that it all comes from Hashem. So if that is true, then it should apply in Chutz La'aretz equally as well. Why? Yes. Okay. Well, we'll see that the idea of it being based on this, or the idea that it's somehow a lesson in Emunah, is based on the fact that we have this comparison with Shabbos, right? And Shabbos applies in Chutz La'aretz as well equally. Only for Jews, of course. When I'm not saying that Shemitah should apply for non-Jews in Chutz La'aretz, I'm saying Shemitah, lichora, if it's a test of faith and a lesson in faith, it should apply for Jews in Chutz La'aretz. Just like Shabbos applies for Jews in Chutz La'aretz. So what I'm saying is that's why the Abravanel is saying that it has to be tied into the sanctity of this land. It can't be only about faith or about benefiting the quality of the soil, right? Strengthening the land. It has to be tied into the unique spiritual quality of this land, that this land is different from all other lands. So that's what the Abravanel emphasizes. Okay? Take a look here at source number 6. This is the Sefer HaChinuch. He says, Misharshei HaMitzvah, another classic work of both halacha as well as tamei hamitzvah. He says, the root of this mitzvah, the tam of this mitzvah is what? Likboa bilibeinu liyatzer tziur chazak b'machshavteinu inyan chidush haolam. It's to somehow ingrain in us, in our minds, very strongly, the idea of the renewal of the world. Right, and then he compares it to Shabbat. Ki sheshet yamim asa Hashem et hashamayim ve'et haaretz. For 6 days, God created the heavens and the earth and rested on the seventh. And then he continues and says, so too, we work for 7 years, and for 6 years, and we let the land rest on the seventh. Why? And the whole idea is, right, for us to understand that everything comes from Hashem. Okay? I'll just skip to the bottom for the sake of time. He says, "Kidei sheyizkor ha'adam," in order that man remember, "ki ha'aretz shemotzia elav ha'perot b'chol shana v'shana," that a man remember. And again, this is about, he writes, he introduces this, it's supposed to be ingrained in his mind in a very strong way. A man remember that in each and every year, the fruits of his land, lo b'kocha u'zgulata totziotam, it's not based on the land or based on his efforts, ki yesh adon aleha v'al adoneha. Ultimately, it's about HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There's a master over this land. Okay, so again, it's a lesson in faith, according to
the Sefer HaChinuch, and how he gets there, it's by drawing that comparison with the Shabbos. And it's not only the Sefer HaChinuch, many others mention, describe how this mitzvah is a test of faith and ultimately a lesson of faith. It's the Kuzari of Rav Yehuda HaLevi, it's Rav Hirsch, the Baal HaAkeda who we mentioned, the Kli Yakar. They all explain that this is about a lesson in Emunah b'Hashem and Bitachon in Hashem. Just like for 6 days I work, and the tendency, heaven forbid, is to see that the product of my labor is me, Kochi v'otzem yadi. So what? So I have to stop for a full day every 7 days and recognize that Hashem is the master over this world. He endowed me, my creator endowed me with this capacity to create, to emulate him, to be like him, as Rav Soloveitchik emphasizes in Lonely Man of Faith and in Halachic Man and elsewhere. Hashem endows man with this capacity to create and to emulate his creator, which is wonderful. But don't fool yourself. Don't think that it's you, right? Don't think that the product of your labor is you. So 1 day a week, you cease from all creative activity. And that's what Iser Melacha is, of course. 1 day a week, you say, wow, I'm not the balabus. I'm not the creator. What is Iser Melacha after all? Right? Work on Shabbos is not walking from my home in Har Nof to the Kotel in the 90 degree heat in July. You could say, wow, that was a lot of work. Wow, you really schwitzed to get there. What is ultimately work? What is Isur Melacha? It's striking a match, which takes very little human effort. But that's an Isur Melacha. Why? Because ultimately, it's about creative activity. That's what's prohibited. So Shabbos reminds us, I'm not the Balabus. There is a creator. Right? And in a similar vein, for 6 years, I work my field, and heaven forbid, the tendency could be for the farmer to think that he is responsible for all the bounty, or that somehow the land is responsible for the bounty, as the Chinuch says, but no. So 1 year out of seven, just like on Shabbos, 1 year out of seven, you stop from all creative activity on your land. It's interesting. You're allowed to maintain your fields. You're allowed, you know, I have fruit trees in my garden. I have a lemon tree. I have a pomegranate tree. There was a period of time where my marechet hashkaya, my automatic watering system, wasn't working and the trees weren't looking too good, and my landlord was not very happy with that, okay? During the Shemitah year, I'm allowed to continue to water my trees. I don't have to let them die. It's very hot in the summers here. I don't have to let them die, but I'm not allowed to do anything to increase produce, to increase the production of fruit, okay? Yes, I'm sorry. Okay. Okay. Yeah. Seven cycles. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But I just want to move a little quickly. We're almost out of time. This idea that Shemitah is ultimately a test of faith and a lesson in Emunah, a lesson in faith, would seem to come from the Gemara itself. Take a look at source number 7. This is a Gemara in Sanhedrin on Daf Lamed Tet. The Gemara there asks, is a Talmud who comes to his Rebbe. First, the Gemara describes how there was a mean heretic who comes to the Rebbe, a Talmud who comes to the Rebbe and asks them a question, and then he's going to give them two answers, the Gemara there says. But the question that the Talmud asks is, "My ta'ama d'shviata?" What is the reason, the ta'am, the lesson behind Shemitah? Our question this morning. And then he says, well, let me answer both questions. And he says, with regards to Shemitah, Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu Yisrael, God said to the Jewish people, Zar'u sheish v'shmitu sheva, plant during 6 years and rest on the seventh, Kidei she'tedu sha'aretz shelihi, in order that you know that the land is mine, says Hashem. And Rashi there says, what does it mean to understand that the land is mine? V'lo yarum levavchem, b'shevach artzechem, b'tishkichu ol malchuto, so that your heart not become haughty with what praise of your land, meaning you'll think that it's all about you and your skill as a farmer. It's all about land and how fertile your land is. No, no, no. It's to remind you that it's ultimately Hashem. You'll forget, the tendency is, God forbid, to forget that everything you have is from God. You'll forget the ol malchuto, the yoke of heaven, the yoke of kingship. Okay? That's what the Gemara and Rashi says. So that's consistent with the Chinuch, and as I said, the Kuzari, and Rav Hirsch, and many others, the Kli Yakar, etc. Now, Rav Kook expands this theme here in source number 9, Kedarko Bakodesh, and compares once again Shemitah to Shabbat, and suggests that Shabbat is, again, just for the sake of time, I'm going to summarize, and I'm going to attempt to try and understand Rav Kook. You know, Rav Kook had the soul of a mystic and the pen of a poet, and his writings are so, I don't even know how to describe it. They're so dense and rich, and you really need to unravel them and to spend a lot of time trying to understand what he means. But what I think he means here is that just as Shabbat is a spiritual experience for the individual, Shemitah is a spiritual experience for the nation. And that's a theme in the thought of Rav Kook, the power of the Ummah, the power of the nation, the power of the Klal. This is a theme that Rav Kook constantly revisits. And so, and you have similar ideas, by the way, in the Sfat Emet, scattered in the Drashot of the Sfat Emet, the Gerer Rebbe. And it's interesting, Rav Kook was a big fan of the Sfat Emet. While he doesn't quote him explicitly, Rav Kook was supposedly, as recorded by his Talmidim, constantly learning the Sfat Emet. He was a big fan of the Sfat Emet, and that, of course, informs his thought. And the Sfat Emet also speaks of Shemitah as this spiritual experience. Okay, so that's continuing with this theme, that it's somehow a spiritual experience. Maybe Shabbat, Shabbos, is a personal spiritual experience. Shemitah, right, is a communal or a national spiritual experience. And then there's one more idea that I'd like to share with you this morning before we end, and that you find scattered in a number of different commentaries. Here's the Sforno in source number 10. The idea that Shemitah, the seventh year, is a Shabbat Shabbaton. It's a sabbatical. And just like a professor gets a sabbatical, and, you know, professors that I've known from the United States come to Israel and they visit family and they hang out in the Sifri Alumit, the National Library, and they maybe they write a book or something. It's a sabbatical. It's a time for the farmer, as you said, to turn off his combine, using modern terminology, and study Torah and engage in spiritual pursuits. And that's perhaps what Rav Kook is alluding to as well, describing Shemitah as a national spiritual experience. But the Sforno here writes, Shabbat LaHashem. Remember, the Torah calls it a Sabbath for God, the seventh year. So the Sforno in source number 10 writes, Shetiyeh kol shana habatla me'avodah hadamah. This whole year, you don't do any work. You're not working on the land, right? Mukhenet lavodato. So what? So it's now, you can serve Hashem, because it's a Shabbat for Hashem, for God. What does that mean? The Sforno says, you're not working your land, you're not toiling on your land, you can toil in the service of God. It's awaiting, it's prepared for service of God. Kimoshe kevan b'Shabbat b'reishit, b'omro Shabbat l'Hashem Elokecha. Just like Shabbos, right? Again, it's compared, this comparison with Shabbos, just like Shabbos comes along once a week when we stop working. You have people that work so hard during the week, the only time they have to study Torah is Shabbos. The only time they have to engage in spiritual pursuits is Shabbos. And Shabbos is a day of rest. It doesn't mean that you're supposed to waste the whole time away just napping and eating. It's not only a day of physical rest, but it's supposed to be a day of spiritual rest as well, a day of Torah study and engaging in spiritual pursuits. And in that vein, the Shemitah year is called a Shabbat, and it's a Shabbat LaShem, a Sabbath, because you're engaging in spiritual pursuits, just like you do on Shabbos, but it's a Sabbath for God. You're putting down your farm equipment and spending time in the service of Hashem. And you have this concept in Chazal of the Yarchei Kala, how at the end of the agricultural year, they would have a month to go to yeshiva. Okay, and that's what the Shemitah year is supposed to be. And the Amek Davar here, the Nitziv, in his commentary on the Torah, says something very similar in source number 11. He says, Otah Shvita, the Torah says you're going to stop, you're going to cease from pruning and from harvesting. So he says, Otah Shvita, de Shabbat Kodesh Tiagam B'Shvi'it, Leman Yosif Lekach B'chol Shana B'Torah U'Ba'Avodah. Same idea. And Rav Shaul Yisraeli, a more contemporary posek here in source number 12, says something very similar, that ultimately it's all about spending that time in an agricultural society where you're working your field for 6 years, spending that time when you're not allowed to work your land, when you're enjoined from working your land, when you're prohibited from working your land, spending that time studying Torah, engaging in spiritual pursuits. And I think you could even see that from the words of the Rambam himself. Remember, we began by looking at two different explanations given in the Rambam's Morin Nevuchim. One was seemingly based on the Torah itself, that Shemitah is a social welfare system. The other or lesson that we can draw from Shemitah, which the Rambam gives in his Morin Nevuchim, is that there are ecological concerns, agricultural concerns. We want to let the land lie fallow so it can strengthen itself. But the Rambam at the very end of Hilchot Shemitah V'Yovel, here in source number 13, writes something very fascinating. And he waxes poetic. He first begins by talking about the Kohanim and the Levi'im. Now, the tithes, as we mentioned, were there to provide for the Kohanim and the Levi'im, the Trumot u'Masrot. The Kohanim and the Levi'im were not given a formal inheritance, a formal nachala in the land of Israel. They could own land, but they didn't have a formal, let's call it, an ancestral inheritance in the land of Israel. But they're spending their time as our spiritual leaders. They're teaching Torah to the nation. They don't have time to work their land, right? They're teaching Torah and leading us spiritually. So we provide for their physical needs. So the Rambam there at the end of Hilchot Shemitah V'Yovel, where he's discussing, of course, the laws of Shemitah, the Rambam, he writes and explains, again, how the tribe of Levi, the Kohanim and the Levim, they're exempt from serving in the army. They're not counted. When the rest of the Jewish people are counted, who's eligible to go off to battle, the tribe of Levi is counted separately and not counted together. And he explains that that's because they're the spiritual leaders of the Jewish people. They're exempt from army service. Again, that's a thorny discussion. We'll have to talk about that another time, military exemptions. But they are also divorced from all material concerns. They don't have to work their land, and we provide for them. And then he ends here with Halacha Yud Gimel at the bottom of your page, source number 13, where he says, it's not only the tribe of Levi. It's not only Kohanim and Levim. Velo Shevet Levi Bilvad, he writes, Ela Kol Ish Ve'ish, any individual who sees himself as a spiritual heir of the tribe of Levi, anyone who wants to divorce himself from all material concerns and dedicate himself solely to spiritual pursuits may do so. And he is called Kodesh Kodashim. He's holy of holies. He sanctifies himself. He doesn't get involved in business and doesn't go off to the army. He's completely involved in spiritual pursuits. Again, a very thorny discussion. We'll have to revisit this another time and ask who can say this about himself or herself? Who is allowed to make that decision to divorce himself from all material concerns? But what's interesting is the placement of this halacha. We're out of time, but why does the Rambam wax poetic and discuss this here at the very end of the laws of Shemitah and Yovel? What's the connection? Ma kesher? What's the connection between someone divorcing himself from all material concerns and just engaging solely in spiritual pursuits? What's the connection between that and the laws of Shemitah? And I think the answer is obvious based on what we saw in the Sforno and the Nitziv and Rav Shaul Yisraeli and others, that the Shemitah year, that sabbatical, is supposed to be a year to engage in spiritual pursuits. 1 year out of every seven, you don't have to work. You're not allowed to work. Instead, you're to engage in spiritual pursuits, to study Torah, to learn in yeshiva for a year. Okay? So we're out of time. I'll take questions after, but just to summarize, we saw together this morning that there are a whole host of explanations, ta'amei ha-mitzvah, reasons given for the mitzvah of Shemitah, lessons to be learned from the mitzvah of Shemitah. And we can put them or place them into six categories. Number one, a social welfare system. We're concerned for the poor. Number two, maybe agricultural or ecological concerns. Number three, it's a lesson in faith. It's compared to the Shabbos, just as the Shabbos is a lesson in faith, a testament to Hashem as creator, so too Shemitah. Four, the spiritual quality of the land, the unique quality, the unique status of the land of Israel, the sanctity, the Kiddushah. Again, this mitzvah is only observed here on this land, in Eretz Yisrael, on her soil. Number five, a spiritual experience, just as Shabbat is a personal spiritual experience, Shemitah is a national spiritual experience. And finally, this notion of Shemitah as a sabbatical, as a year off from work to engage in spiritual pursuits. Okay, I'll take questions privately. Have a wonderful day.